Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, where we strive to bring you the most relevant information from yesterday and today. So I'd like to start out today with an interesting one that's something that I've written about quite extensively, and it's something that I think is a large story that everyone's generally aware of, but one yet that tends to not get the focus it deserves. The story comes from Zero Hedge, and that is discussing how millennial deaths are surging as the opiate crisis deepens. And this is something that is so very important, and it has ties to so many different topics. And, you know, something that we've talked about in the past is the idea that every place that the United States government essentially goes to liberate, it ends up seeing a massive surge in opium production or drug exportations. Afghanistan is a perfect example of that, where before the United States was present there, the overall production of opium was drastically dropping. And the moment that they took over, it skyrocketed, as well as the opiate crisis, as well as the influx of drugs into the United States. So now what we're seeing is this pretend fight against the epidemic of the opiate crisis, when we know that there are direct ties to government representatives and different people in lobbyist positions and corporations that are directly tied in with this process and responsible for its rise. And that, I mean, obviously we could talk about big pharma and a lot of different large institutions that are directly involved in this and even have verified proof of them being behind the rise and actually paying people to overprescribe. And I mean, there are statistics I'll include in the show notes that'll just absolutely blow your mind when we realize that in certain states, there are more pills, 10 times more pills prescribed than the people in those states. It's absolutely crazy. But now what we're seeing is a specific demographic that is being affected by this crisis. And, you know, my assumption would be simply that there is a deeper plot here involved. I mean, the millennial generation in its whole have been a generation that has been openly skeptical of what we're seeing in the government today and not really buying a lot of this negativity and fear tactics that we've seen in the past, given a lot of them have really bought into these two-party politics and the idea of that, the ploy behind that, which is another discussion. But the point is that we're seeing this demographic specifically affected by this crisis. And there's just a lot of implications there. And this is something I really think everyone should pay attention to and dig deeper into and understand where this comes from and why it's growing, actually. That's the important point to recognize, is that right now it's getting worse, even though the government and the people behind it are pretending to rise up and try to fight this crisis when they have a financial incentive to do the exact opposite. So that's a very important story to pay attention to. Moving on to the next story, I think that this is one that it's really close to my heart because I'm a lover of dogs and animals in general. But what we're seeing now, most people are kind of familiar with the idea of these, the police state in general and how it's affecting animals and where these police officers are going in and essentially shooting from chihuahuas to pit bulls simply for them coming out of the front door or whatever. And given I understand the idea that police officers need to protect themselves and, you know, that they feel that their life is threatened, but that tends to be an excuse that is used, whether you're talking about humans or animals alike, where that's the excuse thrown out to cover themselves. And not to say that every police officer is like that. I have police officers in my family, but the point is that that is something that is recognizably used in a very deceitful way,
which is then covered for by other officers within their very organization.
So now what we're seeing is that the DC police have released guidelines, this is coming from the anti-media, for residents to follow so cops don't kill your dog. And that's literally what the title of it. And it just seems to put the responsibility in the squarely on the person as opposed to the police officers to not use force. And, you know, there are incidents where dogs are coming at them and ready to bite them. But even then, I know, as far as this article discusses, it is their mandate to use pepper spray and batons and other things to stop them before jumping to lethal force, which is kind of a similar idea that when we're talking about people and getting shot by police today, which is skyrocketing. And it seems that the quick jump is to go to lethal force. And that is something that I find very frustrating, especially when you're talking about someone's animal. It's a dog. It just doesn't make sense to blame them for something that they're just reactionary. But nonetheless, most of these cases that we're discussing in this article are cases of dogs that were really not at a threat, especially when you talk about the smaller dogs, like a Chihuahua or something like that. And these police officers are killing these dogs for absolutely no reason. And there's even times where they've joked about it and laughed about how they've killed more dogs. And it's just a disgusting topic. And I think this is one that everybody should really look into and understand how this relates to the larger idea of kind of this rising police state and how they're kind of immune from any real criticism and how they cover for themselves. And there's just a lot of weird, disgusting things behind that story. So I recommend everybody dive into that one. Next, there's a few stories that I'd like to talk about that aren't really on the grand scale and geopolitics and the things that we tend to discuss on these shows, but they're things that I feel have larger implications and relate to a lot of interesting topics. The first one is one that was really, really kind of terrified me. I mean, when you really come down to it, we're talking about something that a lot of us really don't understand and something that has a lot of really, really ominous implications. And this is another story from the anti-media discussing how scientists have now created literally shape-shifting cell-sized robots that could change the world. That's the title. Now, how that could change the world is kind of up to the reader, whether that's good or bad. But what it comes down to is that these shape-shifting cell-sized robots, it discusses, and these are Cornell scientists that kind of discovered this, or created this rather, are talking about how these things have the ability to enter the body and release payloads, chemical, electric payloads, for any number of reasons. Now, obviously, my mind, as you all well know, tends to go to the more ominous aspect and how that could be used. And I would even argue how it probably already is being used for military reasons, for intelligence reasons. It's just a very, very frightening idea to something. I mean, we can see historically how things like this have been used surreptitiously and negatively for governmental purposes, and almost are always used prior to our understanding of them and awareness of them. So now that this is actually happening and we're seeing it come out, it would make me immediately think that it's probably something that's already being used. But it's something that it really frightens me when you're discussing how, when we talk about the idea of micro drones and it's their ability to carry certain things out or deliver certain things. It's a whole, you know, literally brave new world that is with the direction of our kind of government at this point, with the authoritarian drive that seems to be happening. This is a very ominous story. And I just don't like the idea I digress. I should make the point that there are a lot of positive things that could come of this. A lot of, whether you're talking about surgery or medical practice, there's a lot of things that this could do that would be very positive. They could change lives and it could change the world. But like I always say with all of these topics, you know, whether you're talking about vaccines or any kind of medical aspect or anything for that matter, it always comes back to intent behind it. And what we're seeing today is a lot of really sinister, malicious intent behind a lot of things most things. Anything that can be used in that way tends to be used in that way, whether it's usually corporations and different entities like that that have a financial incentive to make these things bend to their will. And, you know, and the military aspect is immediately what it always goes to in my mind, or rather the intelligence aspect. When we're talking about the CIA and the NSA and the FBI and how their focus in later years has been acutely on people inside the United States. And regardless of their focus on the war on terror, which is kind of just an ambiguous term, that fighting an idea, which doesn't really make sense. But the idea is that it's been turned on domestic terrorism, and the idea that people within the United States are the biggest threat. And we've seen the lone shooters and, you know, all these different compilation of stories. So the idea that this could be used like that is quite frightening. So it's something to keep an eye on and keep track of where this goes and how it's used and the companies behind it. That's important. Another very interesting story coming out of Collective Evolution is one. It's not necessarily a new story, but it's discussing a topic yesterday that was very interesting to me. And the title is "The Inventor of a Water-Powered Car That Died in a Restaurant Yelling, 'They Poisoned Me.'" Now, this kind of ties into a lot of these different ideas of free energy and just technologies that they don't want to see get out, the repressed technologies, which is a very interesting topic that I'd recommend people dive into further, understanding how many things have been repressed over the years that stand to directly contradict the larger company corporation ideas of this country. And I mean, there's a lot of people within Congress, within the government, who have direct ties to corporations that are threatened by the rise of some kind of new technology, especially decentralized technologies that tend to help the people in mass, as opposed to giving the corporation the ability to charge everybody specifically for their use. And it's just very interesting. So this story is about a gentleman who created a power, and this is not the first man, by the way, there's other stories behind this, a car that actually ran on water. And there's a lot of information behind that, whether you're getting into, I mean, really it just comes back to free energy. The idea that when it comes to a water-powered car, it's something that anybody could do. You don't have to pay for water. I mean, that's another topic where we're getting into in the world where the idea of water is being questioned, whether it's a human right or a service. And that's a very scary thing. We're talking about Nestle in the way that they're kind of stealing water from different states and communities. But as of right now, the idea of water in a lake or whatever is generally free, and you could power your car without paying for it. That scares the shit out of these people. And that's something that I can see being silenced. Absolutely. Now, whether or not he was actually poisoned is up for debate. And that's a discussion to be had. But the point of the story is to understand that historically in this country and the world, we've seen these kind of technologies rise and then get suppressed because of financial incentives. And that is very frustrating to know that the well-being of humanity is being suppressed for the benefit of an elite few. And that's quite frustrating. And that, you know, that's a kind of an analogy for the entirety of this country at the moment. But we could discuss things like free energy and Tesla, or even an interesting one that I always talk about is the idea of hemp. And how a gentleman created a process to manufacture hemp into paper that was revolutionary at a time when paper from pulp of the trees was horrible and chemical ridden and just it was a long process, not to mention you're cutting down trees that take hundreds of years to grow. The man who created this hemp process was basically shut down, along with hemp, as you all well know, that I'll put that in the show notes as well. The history of hemp is a very frustrating one. But this man should be well-known today. He should be famous. He should be historically recognized. Yet he wasn't, because there was an active effort to shut it down because it threatened people like William Randolph Hearst and the Hearst family and their money invested in tree and paper, and as well as the newspaper industry. I mean, that's just one small aspect, but there's a lot of people involved in wanting to suppress the rise of hemp and as it was going to kind of usurp paper, as well as many other things. But again, as topics I'm trying to fine tune for you guys to check out and research yourselves. So that's one to look into. That's a very interesting story. And speaking of stories that are being repressed, one that I want you all to dive into that I'm just kind of gloss over here, because it's one that you're probably all very well aware of, but something that I recommend you continue to pay attention to and continue to talk about so people don't forget that this is happening. But the story is that Fukushima nuclear meltdown continues unabated. This comes from Global Research, and this is a story that is very frustrating because we've all known about this. I mean, first of all, we know that the idea of this meltdown and its terrible effects on the world were actively suppressed and kept from the people. And now it's almost as if the story doesn't exist anymore. And this is something that is continuing and having a huge, wildly detrimental effect on the surrounding ecosystem, and which is continuing to get further and further out and hurting the world as a whole at this point. And this is also a greater discussion to be had about the idea of nuclear energy in itself, and how it affects the world, and how we have a lot of other, speaking of suppressed technologies, a lot of other possible ways to go that are more effective and less harmful for the planet. Yet there's so many corporations involved that we're really never going to see that happen unless these people decide to listen to the masses, which were calling for things like this, calling for change on a kind of a large scale and being ignored. But this is a story I want to spread out there, continue to look at the idea of Fukushima that is just completely ignored by mainstream media. And that's quite frustrating, because this is a worldwide event, unprecedented event. And that's something that should not be ignored. So I'd like to get into another one, actually, that is another kind of an older story as well, that is something that is also kind of being ignored by mainstream media. But there's a lot of differing opinions around this story and whether it stems from actual protest and real kind of a resistance to the government, or whether it was a staged idea. And that comes back to the standoff at the Bundy Ranch, and rather the recent court case there were a lot of interesting things happened there. And interestingly enough, it ties back to the FBI and their corruption and fraud involved in the case. But the article comes from the Ron Paul Institute, and it's discussing another example of why the feds need to be leashed, which we've talked about before, and the idea how the FBI, from its origin, is essentially an enemy of freedom and has been corrupt, deeply corrupt, from the very beginning. Now, this story is something all these will be in the show notes for you all to check out and research further. But this entire court case has been riddled with evidence popping up about the FBI manipulating things and lying and just any number of things that we're all kind of becoming very familiar with in regards to the FBI today. And now we're seeing that the case to some degree was dismissed, and there's all these other interesting topics flying up about this case specifically, which does raise the idea of maybe, you know, wondering whether or not the Bundy standoff was essentially a psyop to some degree. But I think that the larger implications behind this are how the government is able to control these things and control the narrative. And where this really stems from is the idea of freedom when it comes to the Bureau of Land Management and whether or not the government should even be able to own land outright, which is unconstitutional to some degree. But that always comes back to the idea of federal versus state. And that's something that I find inherently unconstitutional, but it's a very interesting case to see. And that now we're seeing that just in more ways than we can count today, that the FBI is being revealed as a very fraudulent organization that does whatever it can to carry out its own agenda. And we've seen that a lot when it comes to terrorist acts as well. Now, understanding that the FBI is responsible for actually creating terrorist events so they're able to stop them. And that's a very real and recognized thing. Even the New York Times did an article about that, how upwards of 90% of the things we see are actually created by the FBI in order to be stopped. And then you ask the question, and whether or not some of these events we've seen have been ones that they failed to stop and then didn't reveal that they were behind it. And there's a whole interesting aspect there. But the FBI is something that is increasingly being revealed as a very fraudulent organization. Now, to get into some larger geopolitical aspects here, this is another story from yesterday that is, it's something that's not new. We've known about this for a long time, but I wanted to discuss this for a few specific reasons. But there's new video evidence that has emerged of the ISIS convoys leaving Raqqa, Syria, under U.S. coalition watch. And that's something that we've written about before. We've written about the secret deal that was revealed by the BBC about the United States coalition allowing these things to happen, the United States government right behind it. And it's a very frustrating thing to see, especially with this war on terror that has been used to as kind of a reason to invade all these different countries and carry out all kinds of just imperialistic actions across the world. And so now we're seeing that the U.S. convoys were, or sorry, excuse me, the ISIS convoys were actually allowed to leave and given free passage for their families. And there's actually video proof now showing that this was exactly what happened. And the larger issue to discuss here, which is the other part I wanted to get at, is understanding where this really comes from. Now, you could argue whether or not ISIS as an organization is now no longer under the control of those who created them, and maybe things have gotten out of control in that regard. But we can verifiably show that the United States government and Western powers are directly behind the creation and rise and funding of the ISIS organization. And I mean, that today is a verifiable fact. But then again, it comes back to whether or not you could argue that things that happened in recent years have been due to that, or whether it was out of control and they lost control of it. I mean, you could go all the way back to the creation of Al-Qaeda to basically combat Russia. There's a video of Hillary Clinton actually admitting that they used that. We've seen it all across the world. They create a reason to be able to go in and like we talked about yesterday, the idea of the humanitarian acts and the destabilization of countries for geopolitical purposes under the guise of trying to help the people, or you know, any number of things like that. And it's quite frustrating. So now that we see that there's actual evidence of them being allowed to leave and that they've openly denied that that was the case, this should be very frightening to people and it should be eye-opening. Another aspect that kind of relates to that, a story coming out of, this was from Mint Press News, but it was written by Caitlin Johnstone. Very interesting story where she makes an interesting analogy and a comparison of showing how the Fox News pundits who cheered on the Iraq war are now suggesting that they arm Iranian protesters. The overarching point, is that war, it unites all parties at this point. And really the larger idea is that there are no parties, that they're all one party behind the scenes, and that war, the military-industrial complex, that larger agenda is what it's all really about. And it comes down to, I mean, we saw the same thing with Donald Trump when he launched the attack on Syria, the missiles, that all of a sudden, all these people that had been calling him a terrible person were called behind him. He became the president that day, and really showing where the true agenda lies, and that's with war and the profiteering behind it. So when we're seeing these people from both sides of the aisle all of a sudden supporting the idea of another regime change aspect, it should be very alarming to us. And that's something that we need to be paying attention to all across the board. So moving into today, there's only a couple stories so far that I think are truly relevant to discuss. And as always, tomorrow's episode will cover the stories that came out right after the show. And, you know, that's always recapping what's happened in the last 24 hours. So starting today, one that I found very interesting is this story coming from Zero Hedge. It discusses 11 Saudi royals arrested for protesting against austerity. This is a very interesting story because, first of all, we have to understand that this is an entity that is openly acknowledged as a partner to the United States, as an ally. And yet what we're seeing there is wildly authoritarian. What essentially happened, I mean, most of you are likely familiar with what happened recently there with the kind of coup and change in power and the mass arrest and execution of all these different people, and princes included, and the seizing of assets. What we saw this time, to read directly from the article itself, as part of the latest wave of cutbacks forced by still low oil prices, Bin Salman suspended payments of royals' utility bills. The decision triggered a backlash among the royals, who weren't prosecuted during the Crown Prince's corruption crackdown / cash grab from late last year. And they swiftly assembled at the Qasr al-Hakam, if I'm saying that correctly, a historic royal palace, to demand the cancellation of a royal decree that stopped state payment of water and electricity bills for royal family members. And after these events, these people were arrested, and we're likely going to see some more executions. And I mean, really what this comes down to is what should be seen as a legal protest to something, a grievance that they had. And what the larger point to understand here is that in this country, this is not a democracy, regardless of what they're trying to portray as their changing idea of this country. It is something that it's a totalitarian regime. And frustratingly enough, a close ally of the United States, which should say a lot. But this is something that we should be paying attention to. Keep eye on what's happening there, because this is a country that is a wild abuser of human rights, that is not being held accountable, that is completely tied up in everything that the United States is doing across the world right now. And it's a very frustrating story to see that this regime that is pretending to change itself is pretty much worse than ever before. And now we're seeing it painted as something new, which is very reminiscent of what we're seeing with Western powers across the world. Finally, to finish today, the story that is one of the most important, as it was yesterday, to really pay attention to, and that is what's been going on in Iran. And the story today coming out of Zero Hedge is discussing how Iran is claiming it has hard evidence of foreign meddling in their protests. And it's a very interesting story, because we saw in the UN Council that most of the council was not standing with the United States government, which shows a large shift in the overall power of the United States government over the UN Council. And we even saw France stand up and talk about how this is leading towards regime change, and basically how the United States is using this as a way to carry out its geopolitical goals, which is exactly what we said yesterday. And first of all, we should say that, like we said yesterday, and the important point to understand here too, is that we've never tried to claim that Iran is a bastion of freedom and human rights. But at the end of the day, we have to understand how they're being misrepresented in this larger agenda. But we should not be taking Iran at its word either. That's important. We shouldn't be taking any government today at its word. We have to understand how much manipulation goes into this from both sides. But understanding the precedent for this, understanding the history behind the United States and its documentable history of going in and doing exactly this to carry out regime change, to carry out any number of things. In a lot of countries, that has to do with resources and minerals and taking control of oil and assets and things like that. So understanding this story, it's hard not to believe that this is what we're seeing, that they probably do have hard evidence of this being carried out exactly like we were talking about it yesterday. But we should be questioning it, just like everything. But this is going to be an interesting story to follow to see where this goes to. And not surprisingly, Nikki Haley and people along this agenda are hardlining and still saying that they're standing behind the freedom of the Iranian people, with no hint of irony behind their ridiculous claims. But this is a story that I think is probably the most important to be paying attention to today, and to just keep following along with this and do your own research. So thank you for joining me today. We'll be back tomorrow with more information, the stories that we find to be the most relevant. And again, I should always stress that we want you to go out and do your own research, your own due diligence, and come to your own conclusions. This is always just meant to be kind of a wrap-up of the information that we find to be most important for you to go out, form your own conclusions. That's the absolute most important point today. And as we've said in past shows, anyone out there that is telling you they have the answer, they have the secret, that they know everything, they're probably leading you the wrong direction. The real power comes from you and your ability to come to your own conclusions. So we'll see you tomorrow. Stay vigilant.